We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Duup and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time. Welcome to In the Know. Mason, we haven't chatted in a long time. There's been quite a few things that have been happening in the basketball world and the Pelicans world, and I suppose the real world. What's up with you? Here you're in a new spot in Chicago still, but new spot nonetheless.
Yeah, we moved upstairs in our own building. So it was just a bigger place. Same rent, nicer spot. Hopefully we're coming to an end of the work from home era, at least for my job. I think we should be going back like late summer, hopefully. But this gives us an office. And so like we can work. Our offices are basically the bedroom and an office instead of the bedroom and the living room, which is like a slight quality of life upgrade.
You mean recording studio?
Yes. Yes. Recording studio. Absolutely.
For the podcast.
Yeah. This echo chamber I'm in, hopefully it doesn't sound too bad for everyone listening at home, but we're working on the acoustics.
Yeah. This is only for In the Know, and any office work will have to be done elsewhere. Are you looking forward to going back to work? What's your vaccination status?
Got shot one, so that's awesome.
Which one?
Shot Pfizer.
Nice.
Yeah, shot two is April 15th, so by end of April should be good. So yeah, that's exciting. It sounds like what the state of Illinois is relaxing requirements. Parts of Chicago are still tough, but if you want to find a vaccine, you can find it, whether it means driving a couple hours outside the city. So
that sounds sketchy, bro.
wait, hold up.
If you want to find a vaccine. Yeah.
No, I mean, but there are enough suburbs, or not even suburbs, it's just like other cities in Illinois that you can go to, and there's good supply. So just depends on how eager you are. But But yeah, because I know that Louisiana is kind of opened up just to everyone at this point. I know you're good already, but sounds like everyone else, whoever wants one, can hopefully get one at this point in Louisiana.
Yeah, yeah, it's open to the general public. And if you haven't gotten it, you can get it at basically like any healthcare center near you. I mean, you just have to go to the state website. I think it's like la.ldh.gov, but don't quote me on that. Definitely Google it and you'll be able to find locations near you. You set up an appointment. I've had a couple of friends go through and they said it was a painless process. I don't want to say it was a painless shot per se. That's, you know, it's not a painful shot. It's like any other shot you'll receive, at least for me. You know, I was a little bit sore on the injection site for about a day in on my first shot. No ill symptoms otherwise. And then
tougher than me, my arm after that first shot hurt for like 3 days, man. There was a lot of soreness. And my mom actually just got her second shot at I'm still calling it Zephyr Field. I don't know what they call it now, where the rugby team plays, but that's where she went. They have that max vaccination set up, which is awesome.
That's pretty dope. Yeah. Yeah. They're doing a lot of these things where you can go and get it done. And for my second shot, 24 hours post the shot, I experienced some fever aches and chills that I was able to get under control with Tylenol, and they, when I went to bed, like they were gone. So it was a temporary experience of like, I guess, discomfort. But that's, my dad got Pfizer as well on a second shot, didn't experience a damn thing.
Nice. Does your company doing anything like for people who get vaccinated, any sort of incentives?
I work in healthcare, so it's like
mandatory. Like, you better.
For my department, it's not mandatory per se. Right. Strongly encouraged. But no, there's not. I don't think there's any incentives. I mean, we're my position has transitioned fully remote anyway. Mm-hmm. And so it's just up to you. Like I was in Atlanta this past week and swung by the office to print some things out. And there would be some people there. And one of the people I met, they're like, yeah, we're pretty much mask free in here. I'm like, oh, you got your shot? And it's like, nope. And I'm like, oh, okay. I got my shots. I'm good, but I'm going to keep my mask on.
Yeah, that's because I know my fiance's dad, they got like a stipend or just like a small like cash payment for getting it. Our company gave us an extra PTO day just to like go get it, or if like you need it for, you know, other side effects. So it's I think it's cool what it sounds like a lot of companies have been doing to try to incentivize folks to go get it. So
I get a t-shirt and a button.
Congratulations.
That's big. Yeah. And it says we stuck it to COVID.
That's,
you're gonna love that one.
I got a respect the pun there. So that's better than money then.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of people who have been vaccinated, the Pelicans, they, you know, their team, the majority of them got vaccinated, and so did the front office and the team members around them. But their play as of recently has been very, very interesting, very April basketball lineups where, you know, typically you see these at the end of the year where there's a lot of injuries or tanking. In this case, the Pelicans have a lot of injuries. Their play has reflected said injuries. But before we get into all of that, we haven't had a chance to talk about some of the drama that went around the trade deadline. To recap, Lonzo Ball did not get traded. And then there was this hoopla of like, oh, well, his dad wants him out of here. And then he was like, no, I want to be here. And then David Griffin's like, he told me he wants to be here. And then end of the day, he didn't get traded. But JJ Redick did get traded last moment. He got traded for another JJ, James Johnson. And Nico Melli went with him. Wes Iwundu came back. And then Mavericks second round pick was delivered. Mason, do you know if that second round pick was this year?
I think it is. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I feel like I heard that it is this year's second rounder.
Okay. Well, you know, the Pelicans have, I think, 4 second round picks this year and then their first, which is a little bit ridiculous, but we can talk about that later. JJ Redick, upon being traded, recorded a podcast. And in that podcast, he went scorched earth. He basically said that he was basically saying he was lied to. He was saying there was an understanding between David Griffin and he, and he said that they had a lot of dialogues, like multiple meetings, about getting him to a favorable place, which was strongly implied to be in the Northeast. I think he said it. He wanted to be closer to his family. He wanted to drive, be able to drive on his off days to see his family. And then he was given his word, and that word was not kept. And David Griffin and that front office should not be trusted. And he'd be surprised if his agents trust that office again. So a lot of strong words coming out of JJ Redick. I thought it was totally ridiculous, nonsensical situation from top to bottom, but curious to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think I feel the same way. At first I thought it was just ridiculous on both sides, because it seemed like it was basically Pelicans reshuffling deck chairs in the Titanic in exchange for a mid to late second round pick. And it's like, well, I mean, go get the second rounder. It's a positive value deal for the Pelicans. But that's before really you saw the fallout. And so I think it was always kind of the writing was on the wall that something was going to be said. JJ mentioned something, he tweeted that he was going to be talking about on a podcast. Josh Hart obviously had that tweet like right after a deal got reported. It seemed like he seemed pretty clear what he was talking about. And so it just seemed like it was like, it almost seemed like, why bother? Why even go through this trouble and do this for such a modest return if you knew that something like this was going to piss off JJ? But on the other hand, if you're JJ, sorry, like, get over it. I want to be clear. If he was legitimately just straight up lied to by Griff and the front office, then that's not a good thing. And that's something that we shouldn't be brushing over, because it's not really a good way to run a business. But if JJ was in any way kind of extrapolating on and just kind of like connecting dots on what was actually said versus what his interpretation of what was said was, then I think we're in dicey territory for JJ. I mean, like, this is, the Pelicans are doing what the Pelicans will need to do to upgrade their roster, upgrade in any small way you can, create, add assets. And I think it was a fine move. I don't have any issues with it. It's not like they sent JJ to Sacramento or another, just, Sacramento's an unfair comparison because they're actually probably playing better than the Pelicans right now. But like, a team that was clearly not in the playoff race and just sent him away and just to get a second rounder. That's not what happened here. Like, the Griff sent JJ to a team that's going to be in the playoffs, and if things go right, can maybe win a series. And so I don't know. I think JJ kind of overstepped here. And, obviously we can never know everything that was said. You need to give truth serum to Griff and JJ to figure that out. But, I don't really have an issue with the trade, all things considered.
Yeah, I mean, that was a really balanced take. I'm surprised you didn't come out guns blazing.
And, I've cooled off a little bit.
You're really level. I mean, I thought the guys at the jump, which, oh my God, I can't believe I'm saying this, but had a really good take on it, which is basically like, what have you done for the org that you get to kind of dictate where you want to go, and they will not act in their own best interest, and they will act in your favor. So that's a totally fair point. And as far as the return goes, yeah, I mean, that second round pick is, I will doubt we'll ever put on a Pelicans uniform. Four second round picks, there's just I think they're gonna trade all these picks, but
and Didi.
I mean, look, they're gonna have two-way roster spots open depending on what they do with Najee and Will Magne, and you can do that, and then with their G League team that's supposed to be Birmingham, I think starting next year, you can utilize the G League for that as well without signing them to a deal. I think, not entirely sure of how they're going to do that, but there's avenues to kind of like keep them in your org umbrella, even if you have to send them to Sydney. But yeah, I mean, I think that second round pick is probably not going to amount to much, but this new JJ, he's been a revelation.
This is probably why I pulled off a little bit.
he's like 34 years old, and he looks like a legit player. Obviously, look, he's not going to have this kind of offensive opportunity every night when the Pelicans are healthy, but in terms of what he's bringing to the team with his effort, with his defensive intensity, and just versatility, this is the kind of forward that I've been clamoring the team go get for a very long time. It just sucks that he's 34 and you know, you're kind of probably seeing the best version of him, and he's gonna cool off at some point sooner or later. But this, whatever this peak is, if you could kind of bottle this essence and go get it in a forward, that's what I've wanted. You know, defends multiple positions, gets blocks, gets steals, can handle the ball, can pass, can rebound, you know, all the above. That's this is what the Pelicans have needed.
Yeah, I had a buddy ask me this morning if how much of the MLE the Pelicans are going to give James Johnson this summer. I was like, come on, let's pump the brakes a little bit. The man's 34 years old, but you're right. I mean, it's recency bias because he just had the best game, I mean, so far. But I didn't know what to expect from him. You know, at this point in his career, he got very inconsistent minutes from Dallas, but he, especially given the Pelicans' injury issues, and they needed guys who could do some of these things, and James Johnson gave him a little bit of everything. That, you know, he could put the ball on the floor and create good passing lanes. And obviously, they're not playing against the top teams in the league here. They played against teams that are either bad or as injury ravaged as the Pelicans are. But I mean, I said it during the game or after the game, and I stand by it. I mean, I think his game last game against the last night against the Hawks was probably better than any individual game JJ's had this season. JJ Redick's had for the Pelicans this season. So, I mean, it's
JJ had the one game to open the season against the Raptors where he hit 6 threes on opening night and did nothing at all. I tweeted, you know, even you had Melly in there. I was like, yeah, in 3 games, James Johnson has scored more points than Melly did in 22 games.
Melly put up he put up 7 points for the Mavs in his debut. So he actually got minutes for them.
Yeah. I mean, look, a little birdie told me that in 3 games, James Johnson has already become a vocal vet leader in the locker room. And obviously you don't know how much of this is oh, they're riding the high off this last win or whatever it is, or they're trying to just pump some good news out there with all this injury stuff going on. But I think it's something. I think that it's something that he's been around the league and he's respected pretty much everywhere he goes. And he brings, you look at the quotes that the young Timberwolves players had about him last year, and they're just an absolute amount of respect for James Johnson, and I think he's already bringing that to the Pelicans. So we'll see how much of a effect it has on the on-floor product going forward, but that's not nothing.
Yeah, absolutely, and I really do think, I mean, my big miss when they got him was that I don't think, I mean, why would you give a 34-year-old minutes right now? If anything, I'd rather see if you got anything in Wundu, because he's guaranteed for next year. But it became very clear to me very fast that that was an atrocious take. And I don't really, at full strength, I don't really give a shit if Wes Wundu plays a minute. If this is what James Johnson's going to bring to the Pelicans on a nightly basis. And obviously, yeah, like he's probably not going to be quite as good as he was in that game, or that versatile as he was last night. But the way he's playing, he absolutely has a rotation spot on this Pelicans team, even at full strength. Even if he's an eighth or ninth guy, which that might be the case, but I want to see more of it.
Yeah, well, you mentioned what kind of contract he should get. And honestly, this is a wild take, but if the Pelicans, you know, what I would like for them to do is handle all their cap business, get everyone they need to sign or trade it
for. There is no contract.
Exactly. That's exactly where I'm going. Give him whatever, you know, difference you have between like you and the tax with enough cushioning baked in so you can have flexibility. But yeah, just make him a human trade exception and veteran presence if you need to. Why not? You know, if you can do it, do it. He probably won't wait around that long in free agency for that to happen, unless the Pelicans are like really fast acting with all their moves. But I would not be opposed to just giving him the uncle contract and keep him around. And you know, you can use him as salary when needed.
Get him to fill the role that that Kendrick Perkins decided to be a double agent when he was.
Oh my God. Well, yeah, Kendrick Perkins did it on the minimum. And so, you know, I would love to bring him back for the minimum, but I wouldn't mind giving him $2-4 million more than the minimum.
Yeah. I said biannual when I was asked about it. I said biannual sounds like I could talk myself into that for sure. If it made sense cap wise.
Look, if it's a 1-year deal with a non-guaranteed back end of it, I could go up to Darius Mills at $7 million if you aren't fucking yourself over with respect to the tax. Which is a tall task given all the people they have to handle with Lonzo and Josh Hart and potential trades they need to make. Tough task.
Yeah. So they would have, what's the rights on him? Would it be early bird? I guess it doesn't matter, does it?
Isn't he still on his Miami contract? It's like a 4-year deal, isn't it?
Oh, I guess so. Yeah.
You'd have full bird, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you would. I forgot that it wasn't the
Mavericks. You're making contract. $16 million. Yeah, I don't think he got that anytime recently.
sure I'm not.
But yeah, so that's definitely interesting. But you talk about Iwundu, he's going to get minutes because everyone is hurt. So let's talk about the injuries.
Yeah.
The first one that kind of hit us was Zion. And that was, if you follow Andrew Lopez, the tweet was kind of scary. It was like, oh, well, they thought that he might miss a significant amount of time. It was probably something worse. And then now you might not miss much time. So he's missed 3 games. He has a right thumb injury. So as far as injuries go, not terrible, like in terms of being able to maintain conditioning and do other kind of stuff. It's really fortunate that it isn't the Josh Hart injury, which is a torn UCL, which will require surgery and keep him out the whole season. So that's good. I have no idea when Zion's going to be back on the floor. I'm sure they're not going to rush it by any means. But that was kind of scary. And again, highlights the lack of depth on this team, but it also provided James Johnson the chance to shine. And then Ingram has a irritated big toe. I don't know what fancy name to use for it, but it's a big toe boo-boo. That's what it is. And now Josh Hart with the torn UCL, likely out for the season. And Nikhil Alexander-Walker last night, he got hit in the ankle. It's a high ankle sprain. Who knows how long he'll be out, probably a period of weeks. Kyra Lewis, calf strain, doubtful. Missed 1 game right after a career high 21. And I don't know how long he's going to be out. So is there a particular injury you want to talk about?
I think it's the net impact of everything. And granted, we got a couple guys could be coming back, but so the Pelicans are down to what? Literally they're starting the original starting backcourt and then no one else, right? No other guards are
healthy. Pelicans are down to, well, now they signed Isaiah Thomas.
Oh, right. Yeah.
He's going to get minutes. He's going to get minutes now. And they're down to starting Jackson Hayes and Steven Adams together. Jackson Hayes and Steven Adams. And they won. And that lineup beat the shit out the Rockets. That lineup was really good. You know, all the other lineups were like, okay, whatever. They kind of hung around the game. Steven Adams, Jackson Hayes beat the shit out the Rockets when they played together. That's how bad the Rockets are.
It came back down to earth a little bit. I was getting the Hawks and Rockets game slipped up. But, yeah, the lineup did come back down to earth a little bit in the second half. But I'm pretty sure I would be shocked.
Steven entered the concussion protocol, and he just didn't play in the second half much. You know, like he got hit in, like, the middle of the third quarter and just didn't come back. And so it was, like, Billy and some, like, weird – pretty much every single lineup – no, yeah, not pretty much. Every single lineup that played that game had never played together before. Never. That's what's wild. But yeah, that's what they're forced to do.
Yeah. We've just been talking too much about how weirdly healthy the Pelicans have been. So then everyone decided to miss games at the same time. And so,
yeah, you can just never, you know, everyone's like, oh, this is a good team. Look at their point differential. I'm like, this is the healthiest team and they suck. Their record sucks. And now look at, they're finally getting injured. It's just, I don't know, man. Like people just, I feel like my disagreement with people is on the definition of good. And to me, a team that is 21-27, even if it has a positive point differential, is not a good team. A good team is what, like, the Jazz are. They're the best team, actually. A good team is like what Dallas is. They're a good team. You know, a good team was like what the Nuggets were before they got Aaron Gordon. They're a good team. they win games. I don't know. Yeah. That's nitpicking.
That's fair. No, I mean, like, if you look at the two teams, I'm looking at cleaning glass right now, and like the two teams closest to a point differential of zero are the Pelicans and the Raptors. Pelicans are minus 0.3, Raptors are plus 0.3. Like, neither of those teams are good. Like, I don't really, I can't make an argument that those are good teams. Like, even so, the team ahead of them, San Antonio, is right there with Toronto and plus 0.3, at 24 and 24. They're not a good team to me either. Like, they're just not.
Yeah, it's silliness. But yeah. Josh Hart got hurt. It's a contract year. Where are you at? We've talked a lot about Josh Hart and kind of like where we stand with him. Does this impact his market any?
I don't think so. I mean, the only way is if front offices don't know what they're doing. And then and like, if you have like recency bias and, oh, well, you know, haven't seen him play in a couple of months. What I remember real, but that shouldn't really in any competent front office, you shouldn't be thinking like that. So, I mean, he's been who he has been this year. I don't think he's, for better or worse, he's been one of the more consistent Pelicans players, and that, you know what you're getting from him. You know, the 3-point shooting is kind of, is probably the one inconsistent part of his game, but that's for any kind of mid volume, mediocre 3-point shooter, that's just the nature of it. That's going to happen. And so, I mean, he's a high energy, good rebounding guard, who's maybe got a slightly better reputation for the 3-point shot than he deserves. And I think we both agree that he's not we don't see the path, or I don't see the path to him being a starter on a good team, even like in 2 or 3 years. And so that to me limits what he should get in the free agent market.
Okay. Let's put aside starter. Do you feel like, when the Pelicans are not contending, they're a good team, is he closing games for them?
No, he's not.
And so, if knowing that the Pelicans slap down $12 million a year for him, what's your reaction there?
I think it's
So let's say it's a Solomon Hill deal, 448.
I think it's a slight overpay, but I don't think it's a debilitating overpay, but I wouldn't love it.
Okay.
I don't know. Like he's squarely in that MLE range to me. If you got to go a little bit above, if you feel like you need to keep him, again, not thrilled about it, but understand it. But yeah, I think MLE is kind of
where. If you're in a territory where you're paying him that much, where does that put you with Lonzo?
I mean, I don't see a realistic scenario in which they keep both those guys. I just don't. So if you're keeping Hart, that probably means that somebody went over the top on Lonzo and just threw out a number you can't in good conscience match.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think, you know, as people get caught up on like, can they like actually keep, like, do they have the cap space to get it done? It's like, no. It's not about the can. It's about the should.
Yeah.
It's always been about the should.
Yeah.
And Lonzo had a hell of a game against Houston. He came back, knocked down 8 threes, had 27 points, 9 assists, played good defense. And then he cramped up. He cramped up at the end there, which was unfortunate to see. But he had a hell of a game. And of course, after when Lonzo has a hell of a game, Twitter is fucking wild.
It was, it was the best 3-point shooting of his career, right? 8 threes, it's got to be.
Yeah, it's a career high for him. Yeah. It ties a Pelicans record. Page has done it like, I think, 3 or 4 times. Ryan Anderson did it. A couple others did it. But yeah, it's ties a Pelicans record. It's a big night for him. I think... Again, I'm not going to relitigate the whole Lonzo issue. It is what it is. We've talked about it. We've written about it, and it'll come down to his price point and what the market is. So we shall see when it comes to that. I think what's important going forward here is talking about how Jackson Hayes is going to be an all NBA power forward just in the future.
Do you know the I'm looking at the lineup data from the Hayes Adams lineup for the season, but obviously it's all in this last game. Probably the most ridiculous number I'm seeing on here. So 42 possessions, which is more than actually I thought they played, but the turnover percentage for this lineup for the Pelicans is in the 100th percentile.
like they didn't turn the ball over.
Right. Yeah. Like 9.5% turnover rate, which is insane. If you look at who's on the floor.
Lonzo had like six turnovers last night. So I guess that all happened when they weren't on the floor together.
Yeah, so the lineup was Bledsoe, Ball, James Johnson, Jackson Hayes, and Steven Adams. 42, or sorry, that was 26 possessions. So the Adams and Hayes overall was 9.5% turnover rate. That five-man lineup had 26 of the 42 possessions, and it was 7.7% turnover rate. So just like obscenely good taking care of the ball, which when you look at the guys on the floor, you'd say, how the hell did that happen?
I just what hey, I don't know what's going on. So what are the stats? I don't know anything about them. What's the net rating? What's the defense? What's the offense? Give it to me.
So Jackson Hayes, Steven Adams pairing has 42 possessions plus 7.3 net rating, and then they are
plus 7.3.
yeah.
Oh, that's not too bad. I mean, that's not I thought it would be like awesome, but that's pretty good.
Yeah. And then obviously just pulling down every single rebound. They were 83rd percentile offensive rebounding, 95th percentile defensive rebounding, just doing the most on the glass. So, yeah, I mean, like most things, you know, if you watched it, most of this checks out, but I just still can't get over the
just absolute such good hilarity. Care of the ball. It's just absolute hilarity. And I love that Jackson Hayes had some eye-popping moments last night, like he always does every single game. But that sequence with DJ Augustine where he blocked that 3-point, he matched up with him in transition, so it wasn't like a switch or anything. He picked him up in transition and blocked that 3-pointer, tapped the ball to himself, and then, like, you know, it took him like one dribble. He was at the rim.
One dribble, yep.
Yeah, he was at the rim and just with a smooth scoop layup, and you're like, holy hell, this is Jackson Hayes. And,
but even the middle part of that sequence was just pure Jackson Hayes, because the reason he only took one dribble is because he spent the first half of the trip down the floor bobbling the ball.
Right.
And he finally gets control of the dribbles once and then somehow does his acrobatic land. Just the full Jackson Hayes experience.
He's a special player. And I think it's getting real quiet for the whole Griff can't draft crowd. Because Nikhil is showing out, Kyra's showing out, Jackson is showing out, and this is going to be my rant for today, because most of that noise is coming from disingenuous fucks.
Let's go. All right.
It's coming from bad faith actors who have made up their mind about David Griffin or the Pelicans or whatever, and after one season, which was interrupted by a pandemic, and the start of another season, which is still in the middle of a pandemic, a short training camp, no summer league, barely any practices, four games in, they're screaming from the mountains, the season is over. Wow. They're screaming, Jackson Hayes is a bust. He's not even, he needs to go back to college. He needs to go back to high school. He needs to, you know, it's just absolute nonsense. You know, with Nikhil, like, oh, he's never going to be anything. What are we doing here? What is this accomplished? Like, you're trying to be right from the get-go this early? I don't get it. And whatever their motivations are for doing that, I'm sure they have some, you know, whether it's being, you know, I don't, I'm not going to get into it, but it's ridiculous. It needs to stop, and just let the man breathe for a second, because Jackson Hayes, he's 20 years old. He can't even purchase a beer, and he has insane physical tools. We've seen him use those physical tools. We saw a lot last year where everyone was hyped about him, you know, from summer league to like the bubble, everyone is hyped about Jackson Hayes. And all of a sudden, like, he has four or five bad games, given everything that's happened in the world to start the season, and he falls out the rotation. Everyone's like, yeah, he's a fucking bust. Like, what? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I mean, right there with you. I think, you know, hold on. People are talking about Kyra being a bust.
People hated the Kyra pick from when it happened.
Because it wasn't Haliburton? Is like that the one?
No, because it wasn't Sadiq Bey.
Oh my God.
Or Aaron Nesmith. Because they wanted a wing. And they've been rooting for that to fail from the beginning. And every time Sadiq Bey has a good game, I see those assholes on Twitter. They're like, oh, look at this. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay. What about everything else? It's like just, it's, he's a rookie, man. Like, games aren't decided. Like, drafts aren't decided this early.
Well, that's I hate that mentality so much, because you can pretty much always find a guy who is drafted after the guy you like, or the guy that your team drafted who's better. But you know what? Most of them probably aren't. And so, like, just because you want to cherry, like, yeah, it's bad faith acting and it's cherry picking just because you didn't agree with something at the time. So you're going to find all the data points that you feel like makes your case stronger, even if it's a straw man argument, you know? And so, yeah, that's pretty frustrating. And like, you know what? We probably shouldn't treat this as binary either, right? You're not either great or terrible at drafting. And no one's saying that Griff and the Pelicans front office made the perfect picks at every spot. Like, that's
there is so much
it's impossible.
There is so much to criticize David Griffin about. So much, from the Adams pick to the JJ situation to even signing JJ in the first place and not, you know, using that cap space to get more assets to bringing in Derek Favors to there is so much to criticize David Griffin about. Like, legitimately criticize David Griffin about. Draft picks that are fucking 10, 15 games into a season, that is not one of them. That's not one of them. I saw last night someone tweeted at me, Najee is ass. He had played about 6 minutes into that game. And it was his like second real game where he didn't get it wasn't just garbage time minutes. He's an undrafted rookie. What are we doing here? I don't understand, man. And you know, it's just I don't know if it's like basketball discourse in general, because you tweeted a Colin, it wasn't Colin Cowherd, it was what's this guy's name? Who was the guy that you tweeted that was just saying absolutely ridiculous things about Zion not being Allen Iverson or some crap like that?
Oh, Broussard.
Oh yeah, Chris Broussard. Chris Broussard. He was like, yeah, well, Zion's not going to, you know, he might not be a top 10 player. He's more of an Iverson or a Westbrook. And it's like, what the fuck are we even doing here? And I don't know if it's that mentality, you know, that being on like all the major media networks that's influencing how people discuss basketball and evaluate basketball. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the fact that we haven't had like a draft pick since Anthony Davis to really watch grow. And that doesn't really count because he was amazing. And so people just don't know how to handle themselves when it comes to young players and rookies and watch them develop. I don't know what it is. It's ridiculous. That's what I know.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to give people that much, because I don't want to give the folks who are doing this that much credit, because also I feel like most Pelicans fans and like true long-term Pelicans fans have had to learn the concept of patience when it comes to this team. And so I feel like it's, as usual, just like a noisy minority of folks. And so hopefully the guys like Hayes and Nikhil and Kyra continue to quiet the naysayers.
I'm loving the weather on Jackson Hayes Island. I'll say that. And you know, the organization is really, really high on Jackson, like really, really high on Jackson. You heard David Griffin in his most recent press conference talk about him in such high terms. And like, you know, like when David Griffin gets in front of the camera, like you really, really have to parse out the truth from the bullshit. You really do. because like all GMs and coaches, not all of them, I guess, but a lot of them, they're very good at saying things that you want to hear without saying anything at all. And David Griffin is an absolute master at that. But he said something along the lines of Jackson Hayes can like defend every position on the floor, and he's so talented and skilled offensively. Now, offensively, you know, we haven't seen him with the freedom to do much outside of like the crazy, like, oh my God, dunk. And that's a product of Stan Van Gundy wanting him to learn how to play the game the right way. And I absolutely support that kind of development, right? It's, I don't necessarily agree that, you know, you're on a bad team, you give them all the minutes in the world, you let them kind of freestyle and do what they want. I think that can be helpful in certain areas, especially for like young guards or perimeter players who need the on-ball reps to learn those decision-making processes, but it can also be very destructive and build really, really bad habits. So I don't really have many complaints about how they're handling the development of the young players. But he said he can defend every position on the floor and as well as that whole offensive thing. And I think that puts in perspective how high they are on Jackson. And I do agree. I don't think Jackson's going to be the type of perimeter player that's going to chase guys around screens, right? But I think you can put him on a switch on just about anybody and live with the results. I think that's absolutely fair. And I think there is a ceiling there where he can be that kind of multi-position switch defender. If, you know, the Pelicans decide to go to a more switch heavy scheme or whatever it is, he can genuinely muck shit up on that end as he gets more experience. I fully believe that.
Yeah. And what's the, I hate to do it, but I mean, like, is the defensive comp or at Jackson Hayes' ceiling, is the defensive comp in terms of his size and what he may be able to do on, you know, multiple positions and switching on screens and all that, is there any better one than AD? Or obviously I don't see his ceiling being as good as Anthony Davis is on defense. Like, that's a defensive player of the year candidate, but like, I'm trying to think of players who match his, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's somewhere between Bam and AD.
Yeah. Right?
I don't want to say in between because that implies he can be better than Bam, but like the that's a tall task, right? I mean, I think Anthony yes. Davis and Bam, they have him soundly beat on being able to rebound the ball, yeah. which he still is not a plus in that department. He's gotten much better, still not a plus. He's a long way to go before he can be in those conversations, but that's kind of like the mold you're looking at, right? Where it's the talented big man that can just do everything on defense.
Yeah, I mean, and let's, I think that if nothing else, that's what the rest of the season is good for, to see, you know, what, like, I mean, it's very clear even since the beginning of the season how much he's grown and how much that it's clear how much some of these younger players missed having a training camp and a chance to really, like, learn the defense and play together.
Just play basketball, period.
Yeah.
Because, no one knew the season was starting, and then all of a sudden the season started. And then, you know, there's no summer league, in which case Nikhil and Jackson would have had important reps in summer league. Jackson would have been playing 30 minutes a game in summer league. There's no doubt about it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a little bit rough, and that goes for every young player. It's not just Jackson and Kyra and Nikhil. It's everywhere around the league. You know, people are talking about, like, you know, Killian Hayes or like some other rookies that, you know, Killian Hayes has been hurt, but they're like, okay, why aren't these guys doing things? Even with James Wiseman, right? The poor guy's been, he didn't play. He played three games in Memphis, basically took a year and a half off of basketball with the pandemic, and then is thrust into an environment with this accelerated training camp and no summer league and all that, in which he's expected to be a starter on a team that has Steph Curry and Draymond is trying to win. And then, you know, it's been crushing towards his development, both mentally and with what's happening on the court. But that's what it is. It's hard on all of these young players. And so, which also kind of like puts in perspective, like, holy hell, Zion is really good.
Yeah. And I think on the Wiseman point also, I mean, you've got to, the second you realize you're getting drafted by the Warriors, you don't even know if you're going to stay on the Warriors. like you hear all these things about them trying to upgrade and you know, maximize their chances in the short term with Steph and Draymond. It's like, well, now, you know, does this team even want me? And so, yeah, I mean, that's a lot for
well, there's a lot of noise because it's, yeah, like, does this even want me? And then there's the other side of it because LaMelo's been so good and he went third. And then there's this whole thing like, oh yeah, they chose you over him. And, you know, it's a mess. I really feel for the kid. It's just not a good situation developmentally for him. I mean, granted, I was never high on Wiseman to begin with. And I think I've said multiple times, like, if the Pelicans, you know, had the opportunity to draft Wiseman in the lottery, I would just not do it. I would not draft Wiseman in the lottery. I'm not very high on bigs that are, again, I think he can only defend one position well at his ceiling. And I think he's a very slow processor and his hands are terrible. And you're kind of seeing all of that culminate in the Warrior system where it requires you to be a very, very quick processor, make quick decisions and do lots of things on the floor. And he's just struggling. He's just struggling hard, but he's better. You know, I feel like he can be a lot better than what he's shown. And that's just a terrible situation for him.
Yeah. Speaking of the Warriors, weird schedule quirk. We play them 3 times over an 11-day span in May. We play them back-to-back in San Francisco or Oakland on May 3rd and 4th. And then, in New Orleans on May 3rd and 4th, then play them in Oakland on the 14th. And I don't think we play them at all this year. So we got them 3 times at the very end of the season.
Is Draymond healthy for those games? I mean, not healthy. Is he active for those games? Is Steph Curry active for those games, you think? I mean, or are they tanking outright for another pick at that point?
I mean, I would think they're going to do it. If they're healthy, they're going to be playing because I'm sure that – I don't think Steph and Draymond have any interest in getting another pick. I think they want to make the play-in game and play – like, even though Draymond just say, like, I don't care about – I'm not going to be motivated for a play-in game.
It's exactly what he said.
Well, I guess I don't know then, but – I feel like, what do you think, if they feel like it's beneath them, they'd rather just miss it entirely? Interesting.
Yeah, I think that organization's been shameless about tanking before, so I don't see why not. Why not do it again? But, you know, I don't really know. Tough to predict there. Gonna kind of stick with the positives. And before we close the loop on Jackson Hayes, you know, we were kind of memeing about him being the starting four in the future. And is there a lineup configuration where you think that could be a possibility? And the second part is, how good does he have to be on both ends to make that possible?
Well, I enjoyed your late night tweeting last night about the BI of the two lineup. I mean, and that's like, but that, the one you were talking about, is kind of the only one that really makes much sense. If you're gonna go big that
way. for those who haven't seen my tweet, I said trade for Karl Anthony Towns, start Jackson at the four, start Zion at the Zion, BI at the two, and then Lonzo at the one. And that was my configuration. But yeah, I think you would need you would need him to be, I think, BAM level good defensively. And I think offensively, I think he's going to get better. I think he's going to be able to put the ball on the floor. And he's already a really good finisher. Because Towns is absolute insane force on offense, especially from behind the arc. It's just, he is the best shooting big in the league, hands down. And so Towns also is just not a very good defender. And you just kind of like be trading off like, okay, Jackson, do the heavy lifting on defense. Where Towns, you can maybe just drop and Jackson just kind of like Swiss Army knives his way through and, you know, blows things up. And then, you know, it's kind of figured out with the rest of the guys. I don't know if it's going to be viable in any time in the next 2 years, because I think Jackson's still pretty far away, but it's fun to think about.
Yeah. Is there another, let's get out of fantasy land and pretend that Towns is not available. Is there another big or like legit kind of like, even if it's a 4 or 5, like that guy plays the majority of his minutes at the five, is there another one you feel like you could still have as much fun with that type of lineup?
With still starting Jackson?
Yeah, at the four, yeah.
Jackson at the four. No, I mean, Towns and Jokic would be the two, like unbelievable, no question fits. I'd be curious how it works with Sabonis because he's such a good passer. He's averaging 6.2 assists a game, and maybe, you know, he can he kind of already does this like dance with Miles Turner, and Miles actually shoots, and you know, maybe you have confidence that Jackson can be a Miles Turner level shooter, because I don't think Miles is a very good shooter. And maybe Jackson can be that. I don't know if that's the best use of Jackson's talents per se. It'd be kind of a wonky fit though, I think. But who knows? And I think the other part of this equation is Zion, right? And like how good can Zion make these guys? And so I Jokic and Towns is kind of where I draw the line. I think it could work with sheer talent with some other dudes. Like it would work with Embiid, it'd work with Anthony Davis. It'd just be ugly. It wouldn't be a fun working.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe Jackson just turns into this offensive threat and you're like, holy shit, yeah, you can just play with any of these bigs.
I'm all here for Jackson Hayes taking like a half dozen drives per game for the rest of the year to see what happens.
Just yeah, he was attacking defenders off the closeouts last night. Like, awesome. What? Dude, he that catch and shoot three that he had was just totally effortless. He just like caught it. He's a very, very quick decision maker. And I think that's underrated about him. And he moves the ball really well. He finds open teammates, and he knows either he's going up with a shot or he's moving the ball, or if it's like putting the ball on the floor, he's a quick decision maker. I think the quality of decisions will get better as he plays more. I don't think he makes bad decisions offensively per se. Defensively is another story. I think he can make bad decisions / fall asleep on defense. But again, he's like a toddler in NBA terms.
That's he's still learning to play. Yeah.
Right. So that's very fun to imagine. If Jackson Hayes can turn into that player, the ceiling of this franchise is quite a bit different, even though you already have a tier one player like Zion. Yeah. That's the loop on Jackson Hayes. And you know, the Pelicans have an interesting slate of games coming up. We'll see if any of them are healthy when it's Zion or Brandon Ingram or even the younger guys. I'm all for kind of weird lineups and then winning some, losing some, and waltzing your way into the lottery and seeing what to do with the pick. I think they're going to trade those picks. I said that early in the pod. I think, you know, if this is a non-top two pick, I think they trade it. I think it's gone. That's their first round pick. And I think the second round picks, yeah, they're basically all gone too.
So over under 1.5 players from this draft class on the roster, even including two ways.
Even including two ways?
Yep.
I'll go over. Okay. Because that counts undrafted people, right?
I wasn't thinking about that, but yeah, I mean, if you think an undrafted guy is going to make the roster,
as a two-way, Najee's a two-way. Yeah. I go over. I think two is a solid number.
Okay. Does that include Didi?
No, that's not this draft class. That does not include Didi.
Okay.
But yeah, I think they can bring in, you know, a rook or two rooks and then just G League them. I think that's what they'll do.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't be on the team. What? Here's a better question for you. Over, under 2.5. No, let's go. 3.5 first round picks traded by the Pelicans this summer.
This summer. Under.
Under. What's your number?
I don't know. I guess I'll have to prove me wrong. I don't see the big fish becoming available this summer.
But what if it's multiple small fish? What if it's like, you know, you trade a pick for Harrison Barnes, you go trade a pick for Larry Nance, and then you know that's two already. You go trade, you know what I mean? Like things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it. I was thinking more like you trade a pick or two for someone who's like not the huge get, but it becomes available and you feel like you fit the culture that you're and the roster configuration that you're trying to strive for. But yeah, I was my number was kind of like at one or two more likely. If I had to pick one, it would be, you know, a couple picks.
Okay. Well, then I'm moving the over under to 2.5 and I'm taking the over because my number is three.
Is it?
I think they move three picks this summer, three first round picks. And I guess, are we including swaps here? I guess we.
Swap for half a pick.
Half a pick. Okay. Yeah. I'll stick with three. I'll stick with three picks. I think they're going to be crazy aggressive this summer, whether or not a big fish comes into play or not. I don't think they just like roll back with the same players and kind of dick around. I think they will make moves.
Yeah. I think they're, I mean, yeah, there's a culture of losing building right now and they've got to fix that. So I agree. I think they're aggressive, whether that aggressiveness comes in the form of, I mean, I guess it kind of has to come in the form of picks because it's not like you have, unless you're signing trading Lonzo Ball. That's the one probably asset you've got in terms of salary matching purposes. The rest, I mean, I don't really, you don't really have many other, like you're not going to get a solid asset in return for Steven Adams' contract. Obviously you're not going to get anything of value for Eric Bledsoe. So like it would have to be those players plus a pick. The only player you're trading absent picks and upgrading is probably a sign and trade for Lonzo. I mean, obviously you could trade some of the younger players, but those guys aren't making enough money to match salary. So it would have to be picks almost.
That and I think this organization would rather keep their players and grow internally and trade the picks rather than trade the players.
How much of that to you is like sunk cost fallacy and just like having a bias towards your own guys versus professional?
Yes. The answer is yes. I think that's what it is.
Fair enough.
I think that's 100% what it is. I mean, sure, there's an element of like, hey, we really want to build something, we want to grow something. And, you know, they've had a lot of turnover with Anthony Davis and Drew and all of that. Yep. So there is some merit to that. You can't be constantly trading your guys out, especially if there's a situation where they're letting Lonzo walk, right? Or both Lonzo and Hart walk, because you know you can't just have talent drain going every single year since Zion got here. So I think part of that plays into it, but I think 100% is I think Jackson Hayes can be, you know, Siakam. I think Nikhil Alexander Walker can be, you know, like Manu 2.0, whatever the hell. I think there's that component way more than anything else.
Yeah, and I think we've seen enough recently from Kyra and Jackson to justifiably want to see more. I think Nikhil, I'm a little less sold on, and not to say like I feel like he's been good in his own right recently too. I just I feel like if there was one of those three that I was ready to move from in order to make an upgrade elsewhere, I feel like Nikhil's the guy. Would you agree with that?
I would be fine moving from Jackson or Nikhil. I think Kyra is the only one that I'm most curious about. I mean, I'm fine moving on with all three of them. Let's be real.
Yeah.
I like them all, sure. But you know, if I'm moving them, I'm pretty confident that someone's really good's coming back, and so I'll be fine with it. But there is that other component where it's like, okay, well, if you want to be a good team and you make all these big swings and you bring in those big players, whether it's you know, whether it is a guy like Beal or Karl-Anthony Towns or Sabonis or anyone like that, you know, or your multiple few guys like Nance and et cetera, your salary bill is going to get higher. Your top end is going to be pretty heavy. So it's nice to have that cheap cost control production. And so that there is a financial basketball reason to hold on to those guys rather than the picks. Because those picks, you know, these guys have been in your system for a few years now, and then they're developing and they can produce. Like they're getting to the point where they can win you minutes on the floor. You know, like Jackson minutes are no longer like insane negatives. Kyra minutes never were insane negatives, and they'll probably get better. Likewise with Nikhil. So it's good having those guys around for the next few years as your roster gets more expensive from other more talented players.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah, so there we are. I think we covered a good amount of what's happened this week, including the drama and got me in a little rant with about some bad faith actors, but we're going to have a podcast coming up soon with your question and answers. So keep that in mind and look out for it. And thanks for listening.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.